Now, in chapter 14, we are given the strategy of the battle that Jonathan carried on. And here at Michmash, and this is the chapter that we're told that General Allenby read the night before he made his attack upon the Turks. And he used the same strategy that Jonathan used to win the battle, and he won the battle against the Turks. That was back in World War I. It's quite interesting sidelight, I think, on this, and I'm not going to go into the strategy of this battle. To begin with, I'm not very well acquainted with the geography in that place. I wanted to go there, but our time was limited, and the guide just wouldn't take time to take us there. Well, he didn't have the time. I don't mean to blame him. Well, we just didn't have the time to go there. And as a result, why, we had to head in a altogether different direction, and we didn't get to see this. Another thing is, I'm not a military man. I'm sure that when General Allenby read this chapter, it was a real thrill to him to see how Jonathan did it, and it was approved military tactics, because this man, a great general and a wonderful Christian, reading his Bible, read this chapter here. Now, actually, we find that what took place is that Jonathan is the one who planned the strategy, and he was able to take his men through this very narrow pass. That was the secret of it. You see, they have very few instruments to fight with, and so they've got to get in a place where only a few can fight on either side. And that would put Jonathan and his men to a distinct advantage, you see. That was the same thing that happened at Thermopylae, the narrow pass. The Greeks were greatly outnumbered by the Persians. But if you could bottle them up, where only a few Persians could fight at a time, and the Greeks were much superior man for man, well, they could win. And here, Israel was much superior to the Philistines, man for man, but hopelessly outnumbered. And that actually was the strategy. And even I could see that this would work to the advantage of Jonathan. And this is what happened. And I'll not go into the detail of this chapter, and there's a great deal of it here, because we are actually after that which is a great spiritual lesson here. And we see now that in verse 18, "And Saul said unto Ahiah, Bring hither the ark of God, for the ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel." Now, he didn't need that, as we've seen before in the days of Samuel, that the children of Israel, in a superstitious manner, took out the ark. And again, Saul is doing it for practically the same reason. Now, we are told in verse 23 that in spite of that, "So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth-Aven." So that Jonathan's strategy is what won it on the human side. And God's with this young man. He was a great young man. It's too bad he didn't live, but we'll find out later what happened to him. Now, verse 24. "And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth any food until the evening, that I may be avenged on mine enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. And all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground." Now, the interesting thing is that Jonathan, the son, had not known this strange thing that his father had put down, that you're not to eat anything till the battle's won. Well, Jonathan's already won the battle, actually. And that is the thing that has happened here. We are now beginning to see the real nature of this man, Saul. And again here, this man, Jonathan, gains a great victory. But again, Saul takes credit for it. And we are told here that Saul says, "Now, cursed be the man that eats anything until we've been avenged." Well, Jonathan's already done it, Dad. Saul needs to know that his son has got the battle, and he knows that, but he's not willing to give this man credit. Saul took credit for the victory. His modesty is now gone. Saul's jealousy is also revealed here, as we are going to see. Now we read, and I'm reading verse 26, "And when the people were coming to the wood, Behold, the honey dropped, but no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. Now the army didn't dare touch it, but Jonathan, verse 27, Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand and dipped it in an honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people and said, Thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. Well, they hated to see this, because this boy is the one that's got the victory. Then said Jonathan, My father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened because I tasted a little of this honey. How much more, if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found. It was a foolish thing that Saul had done. These men are weary. They fought a battle and won it. And now Saul says, I'll not let anybody eat anything until I'm avenged of my enemies. You see, his modesty is absolutely gone. And we are told here that he actually built an altar to the Lord and offered sacrifices. And then in verse 36, Saul said, Let us go down after the Philistines by night and spoil them until the morning light, and let us not leave a man of them. And they said, Do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. Then said the priest, Let us draw near hither unto God. Now, will you notice this section here, and I'd like to read this section in your hearing. Verse 37, And Saul asked counsel of God, Shall I go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? But he answered him not that day. You see, God now is not using this man at all. And Saul said, Draw ye near hither, all the chief of the people, and know and see wherein this sin hath been this day. Now, you see, he's not willing to take the blame himself. He said, somebody else has sinned here. For as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among all the people that answered him. That army stood silent. They knew Jonathan had got the victory. They knew Jonathan had tasted the honey that day. And now this man Saul is saying, the reason God didn't answer me is just because somebody didn't obey me here, and they've broken this oath. And the army knew that Jonathan had tasted the honey, and they knew that Saul was putting up a tremendous front at this time. And the army stands silent because he's king. Now I read on verse 40. Then said he unto all Israel, Be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side. And the people said unto Saul, Do what seemeth good unto thee. They're not talking much, you see. Therefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, Give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. You see, Saul knew it was Jonathan. And Saul said, Cast lots between me and Jonathan my son. And Jonathan was taken, of course. He's guilty. Guilty of doing what Saul didn't want him to do, or said that there be a curse upon the man. Then Saul said to Jonathan, Tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die? Die for that? And this man and Saul answered, God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. Now, what does this reveal? His own son. He would actually destroy his son if he stood in his way. Why? Because he's jealous of his son, and he wants all the glory for himself. Now, let's listen to what happened. And the people said unto Saul, that army stood silent through all of this, but now they're not about to remain silent. And the people said unto Saul, Shall Jonathan die? Who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day, so the people rescued Jonathan that he died not. Now the true character of Saul is revealed, friends. I believe that we are now seeing the true character of this man. And we're not only going to see the true character of this man, but we're also going to see later on, and we'll not be able to do that today, that he will now come in direct disobedience to God. And he's going to do the thing that later on brought tragedy to the nation Israel. And had not God intervened, it would have meant the extermination of the nation. This man Saul now is revealing that he's not God's man at all, but he actually is Satan's man. And we'll see next chapter that he's not obeying God any longer, but he's following his own devices. And finally, the Spirit of God no longer will speak to him. God will give him no longer leading, and he'll turn from God to the underworld. And then we'll see that remarkable incident of going to the witch of Endor. This is a tremendous section with a great lesson, friends, for you and me in these days in which we're living, in which we're seeing the manifestation again of demonism, the occult, the worship of Satan, and all of this business of dealing with the stars and wanting to know about the future by buying a little piece of paper at the 5- and 10-cent store. God help America today, because there are a great many Sauls abroad.